Welcome. Hola. Bienvenidos. Bonjour et bienvenue to the Social Network Show. Welcome to the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. We give you actionable information to make your social networking the best it can be for business to business, business to consumer, and for folks who just like to post. And now, broadcasting from the studios of the Hank Greenspoon School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, the host of the Social Network Show, Jim Nico, and Dr. Jane Kawaski.
This is a talk show. On it, we, your host, Jim and Dr. J, interview guests who are experts on various aspects of online social networking, hence the Social Network Show. Observe that I did not specify whether we were coming to you live over the air via radio waves, or recorded, then broadcast over the air, or streaming live over the internet, or recorded, then uploaded to the internet. Audio is audio, and it is what you hear, not how it reaches your ears, that matters. We will discuss that idea more on today's show. This is your host, Jane Kawaski, experimental psychologist, Dr. J, along with my co-host, Jim Nico, founder and CEO of Social Network Intermedia, LLC. We are honored that today you will be hearing from our guest, Norman Pattis, perhaps best known as the founder and former chairperson of Westwood One, which he grew to become the largest radio network in America, providing entertainment, news, weather, sports, talk, and traffic programming to some 7,700 stations. Not surprisingly, in 2009, he was inducted into the National Radio Hall of Fame. He has since founded and chairs Courtside Entertainment Group. I suspect that name is related to the fact that he has been a Los Angeles Lakers season ticket holder for the past 30 years, and Courtside includes Podcast One, the premier distributor of online and on-demand audio entertainment. And we're happy to say that we are part of Podcast One family. Just search for The Social Network Show at podcastone.com. And there's even more to him than that. However, but first, welcome to the Social Network Show, Norm.
It is a pleasure to be here.
Thank you, Norm. We see you as the top guy in radio or audio on demand radio in the world. So what an honor. Thank you.
Well, you know, I hope you'll feel the same way after this interview is over.
Well, Norm, as part of your involvement in broadcasting, you've been appointed by Presidents Clinton and Bush to the Broadcasting Board of Governors, the independent federal agency that oversees all U.S. civilian international media, such as Voice of America. And one of the things you did there was to create Arabic language television and radio services reaching all 22 countries in the Middle East. But your service is not limited to broadcasting, I want to point out, as you are also a multi-term appointee to the University of California Board of Regents, where you chair the Regents Committee on Oversight of the DOE Labs of Los Alamos, Lawrence Livermore, and Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratories. And as a former resident of Los Alamos myself, I am impressed that you are also chair of the Executive Committee of Los Alamos National Security, LLC, which manages and operates Los Alamos National Laboratory. And to wrap up, you take an international view of things through your membership in the Council on Foreign Relations and the Pacific Council on International Relations. Norm, forgive me if I seem to be in some kind of intellectual swoon here, but wow.
Geez, I can't believe I do all those things. Do I really do all those things?
Well, I guess
that old saying, if you want to get something done, give it to a busy person, is true after all.
And you're on the cutting edge of technology in that you have at least two or three clones.
I've always been sort of, you know, wacky about that. But, if anybody would have told me 30 years ago or 20 years ago, that you would have been able to read off all those things you read off, I would have said, yeah, look, you're nuts. I mean, you know, I'm running a radio syndication company, and that's a full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this other stuff, the chairman of the board of the National Security Laboratories, give me a break. What do I know about that? And, it's just been, it's really a gift, you know, to have, and I think it, it's probably an outgrowth of the success that one has in their chosen profession that allows them to, become involved in things that you would never imagine early on in your career.
Interesting. Yeah, I appreciate those thoughts. Perhaps once you get the handle on one thing, then you add another and get a handle on that and add another type of thing. Our topic du jour is we'd like to talk about, first of three things, the irrelevance of the medium, that it's the content that entices listeners, regardless of the delivery system, whether it be AM, FM, internet streaming, or podcast downloading via mobile app or whatever, that what is what matters or what counts. And I have heard that you are rather passionate on this topic. Can you tell us about your views on this?
Well, I've been a content guy since I got into this business. I've always felt that content was king. By the same token, when I started Westwood One 35 years ago, the easiest way to produce content and have it reach a national audience, at least in the audio side of things, was through syndicating to radio stations or through providing programming to radio networks. And at that time, it was the best way to reach the largest audience because no individual station group could own more than 5 AMs or 5 FMs. Now, that's not in a city. That was in the country because there were broadcast ownership rules. So for somebody who was producing content, if there was a station in the market that that wasn't interested in that programming, it was likely that there were three or four other stations in the market that were in the same format, and one of them would be interested. That changed with deregulation and the virtual, dropping of any ownership limitations, so that now, in order to get a program on the air, you've really got to be able to make a deal with one of the major two or three broadcast groups. And they are much more difficult to do business with because they know that they hold the keys to distribution, and they strike tougher deals. And it's tougher to get a deal with them to provide a national audience that's large enough to provide the kind of support from advertisers that we need in order to be successful. So, with that having been said, I became far less enchanted with the syndication and network radio model and became much more enchanted with on-demand audio, or what has traditionally been referred to as podcasting, along with some streaming, so that I could provide programs that I thought were good programs that could develop an audience. And I wouldn't have to talk to a single radio station to do that, because all I had to do was make sure that there was a large enough fan base to be attracted to the program, and we could make it available via the internet and in a variety of different ways.
Norm, if there's one tip that you could give, like, say, a broadcaster, someone in school that has a dream of being a podcaster even now, what would that be?
Well, I think that if you take a look at podcasting as a medium, a whole lot of those people who have a dream are already taking part in it. I mean, if you look at iTunes, they have over 250,000 podcasts that are on their site, and the vast majority of them are what we would refer to as backyard podcasts, in the sense that it's somebody doing it from their house, their home, and from their garage, and they're being listened to by maybe 50, 60, 70, 80 people. So there is a practical way to get started, which is just to get started. There are companies that are out there that will provide you with websites, bandwidth, and even sales, even though at that level there's probably not much hope of selling it to an advertiser or generating much subscription revenue. What we've focused in on is we've got 200 podcasts on our site, and they are podcasts that have demonstrated the ability to attract a very, very large audience. You won't find a podcast on our platform that doesn't generate several thousand downloads per episode, and we have programs that generate as much as 2.5 million downloads per episode. So we've tried to aggregate the biggest, most listened to, most popular in a wide variety of genres, so that we had the critical mass to be able to go to advertisers and say, okay, here's a company that can provide you the best and the largest impact in on-demand digital audio, and you don't have to talk to 250,000, different people. You only have to talk to us.
Well, thank you. That I really appreciate that answer, and we're going to return for more with Norm Pattis, the top person in radio and now audio on demand in the world. One moment, and we'll be back.
Questions? Comments? Email us at questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. We'll be right back.
As internet technology advances, so does the threat of cybercrime. And the instant you go online, you become vulnerable to dangers such as identity theft, computer viruses, phishing, spyware, and more. In times like these, we must all protect ourselves from cybercrime. Antivirus software, firewalls, and security patches are just the beginning. Never open suspicious emails, only navigate to trusted sites, and change your passwords every 90 days. Back up important files to external storage devices. Tell anyone who uses your computer to be vigilant when downloading from the internet. Keep your kids safe on the internet. Teach them never to give out personal information or post information about their school or extracurricular activities. Installing parental control software and monitoring their computer are all good ways to prevent cybercrime. To learn more about cybercrime, visit ncpc.org or contact your local law enforcement agency.
A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
Now, back to the Social Network Show.
Welcome back to the Social Network Show. This is your host, Jane Karwoski, and Jim Nico and I are in conversation with Norm Pattis, the pioneer of on-demand audio through Podcast One. And I wanted to ask, Norm, in relation to what you were just saying about the number of downloads per episode, how do you define a download?
Well, therein lies a very interesting question, because if you're going to be in the advertising business, you have to convert downloads into a measurement that an advertiser will accept. And different companies define downloads in different ways. And what we've done is we've generated metrics and methodology that takes what is referred to as a download, which is when somebody goes to the podcast and hits the play button, and they're either listening to it at that time as a stream, or they're downloading it for future use. Both of those are referred to downloads as downloads. But there are anomalies and, you know, technical issues and things of that sort that take place. So one of the difficulties that has faced the medium is finding a way to convert downloads into impressions, which is what advertisers buy, at least through the major, you know, the brand advertisers through major agencies. So we've come up with a formula that that agencies readily accept that basically takes the total amount of downloads, filters them for anomalies and other things, and basically, depending upon what period we do an actual survey, we'll adjust the gross download number to impressions, which is usually roughly 20% decrease. So if you've got 100,000 raw downloads, you've probably got 80,000 impressions over the course of that program. So it's a digital term, and it's a digital term like so many digital terms, which needs to be translated into the jargon of the not only the consumer, but of the advertisers who purchase it and provide, you know, our primary revenue stream.
Okay, so we get it from downloads to impressions. Then what is the next step? Impressions are the times people are going to see that, correct, on a website?
Well, in this case, listen.
Okay. All right.
Because we're strictly audio. We're not visual.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, putting a plug in for audio, I mean, I've been a cheerleader for radio for 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not changing now. It's just that our form of distribution is different, and I think that on-demand has a lot of advantages that traditional radio broadcasting does not. A, there's a pause button.
Mm-hmm.
And B, you can consume it whenever you like. I mean, we still have radio shows that we own and that are on the air. I mean, we've owned Loveline for over 30 years. And that program with Dr. Drew is a network radio show. It's streamed visually, and it also has an audio podcast. And the audio podcast has by far the largest audience. It's more than the radio network, and it's way more than the video stream. So, you know, audio has its advantages because, of course, it's mobile, and a major portion of the consumption is done on iPhones and Androids, you know, you can easily listen to it in the car because of Bluetooth connections and so forth. So, but I think the question that you asked was, what's the next step after impressions?
Mm-hmm.
Well, advertisers are buying impressions in all mediums. They do it in radio, they do it in television. So that's their unit of measurement. So if we can convert our download information into impressions, then we can supply packages and demonstrate the size of our audience in the same fashion that other mediums are, which makes us competitive with the traditional mediums that are currently being purchased. So, you know, we know what the cost per thousand is, you know, what it costs to reach 1,000 impressions. So we can compare our cost per thousand versus local radio, network radio versus network television, local television, and all the mediums that traditional advertisers are buying.
Very important step there, yeah. What now, you went into some of the reasons here, but the other thing I wanted to ask was why you feel audio trumps, in many cases, other entertainment, under what circumstances and so forth. What do you think the special niche audio consists of?
Well, first of all, audio, especially podcasts, are primarily consumed by fans of the personality or the subject matter. You know, we have an interesting formula over here, which is not rocket science, which is if we're going to launch a new program, we like to launch the program with a personality who's got a really large social media following.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can let their following know that there's going to be a podcast. And then we like to augment that program with guests who have equally large social media following, so that they can go out to their fan base and let them know that they're going to be on that podcast. And then we like to have some of our podcast hosts who have large audiences become guests, or the personalities of the new podcast to be guests on other podcasts. And then we cross-promote across all 200 of the podcasts that are on our platform, so that we become a virtual, perpetual motion self-promotion machine. So that, you know, the 120 million listeners to our programs every month become a great base to promote to, so that ultimately we know if the program is successful that they become sticky and they like what they're listening to. And if the program ultimately becomes unsuccessful, you know, we know it's not because we're not letting enough people know that the program exists. We know that there's something relative to the program content that is not resonating with the audience.
Wow, brilliant insights. Norm, one thing that's haunted me for quite some time now is almost like an ancient metaphor or simile, in the sense that when I was thinking back, and I heard you at Convergence, and I've been studying some of the other materials that you put out in various video podcasts, et cetera, one of the things that hit me was, I was thinking through radio in the old days. And what hit me was that how far you've brought this medium in this sense. That way back when, I remember when I was listening to Elvis or Little Anthony and the Imperials or Del Shannon or whoever, what I realized when I listened to the radio, which I did every chance I could when I got in a car or had a radio at home, was that I love these songs. But what I longed for, was to get to those particular artists, hence 45 records and LPs. So what, in a sense, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't audio on demand via podcasting actually an extension of our demand to hear who we, you said it earlier, we want to hear who we want to hear. It's really the epitome of that, isn't it?
Well, you want to hear who you want to hear when you want to hear it.
Yes, exactly.
You know, I mean, you want to, so this gives you a wide variety of choices, way more than broadcast radio, because broadcast radio is controlled by a program director, and it has to fit the formatics of the station. By formats, I mean, if it's a talk radio station, if it's a top 40 radio station, you know, if it's a hip hop radio station, a country music, a classical music, it has to fit the format. Well, we don't have to fit any format. I mean, I don't know what format would carry Stone Cold Steve Austin's podcast. But I'll tell you this.
I love it.
He regularly delivers 1 million listeners per episode. I don't know what radio station would carry Snooki. She regularly delivers over 2 million listens. By the same token, you know, we carry the National Public Radio programs, Freakonomics and Radio Lab, which have very, very large following, you know, and a different type of audience. We carry a lot of sports programming, everything from repurposed radio shows like Rich Eisen and Dan Patrick, to personality-driven shows from various sports genres. I mentioned Stone Cold Steve Austin. The wrestling category has been huge for us. You know, Steve became so successful that we put Chris Jericho, J.R. Ross, Roddy Piper, and they've got huge audiences because there's a great big fan base there. And then we just launched a program with a guy named Chael Sonnen, who is the MMA version of a WWE superstar. You know, we've got some things coming that we're going to launch that I can't talk about yet. But actually, I do have something that I can talk about, and you'll be the first to know,
to be perfectly honest,
because they just brought me the contract and a draft of the press release, and it hasn't been released. So are you interested?
Yes.
Yes, I think
so. Well, we just made a deal with the Associated Press to provide 60-second newscasts that will be included in all of our podcasts. And we have the technology to be able to grab the latest news feature And as anybody who knows the Associated Press, they provide audio news features to the radio business every hour on the hour.
Wow. Amazing.
7 days a week.
Amazing.
So what we're going to be able to do with our technology, which is pretty much exclusive to us, is we're going to be able to grab the latest newscast at the time the consumer downloads the podcast. So when they listen to the podcast, if they listen to it at the time of download, they're going to be getting the latest news.
Wow.
So if you want to listen to any one of our shows and you listen to it at the actual time that the show is, you know, is uploaded, you're going to get one news report. If you listen to it 6 hours later, you'll get the later news report. And if you listen to it a week later, you'll still get the latest news report. So this is, you know, it's never been done before because there's never been an entity in the podcasting world that has had enough programming inventory to be able to deliver the critical mass and the audience size that a national advertiser would be interested in, and do it 24 hours a day in all day parts, and do it digitally so we know exactly when those spots are running and in what day parts they're running, and so that we can give advertisers exactly what they want in terms of being able to schedule their announcements.
Wow. That is awesome, because that addresses the one thing that the timeliness of, you know, there's something about feeling in connection with what's going on with the world right now.
Right.
That previous to this great connection you've made here in this advance, it just wasn't there in podcasting because it was sort of static or at another time or whatever. But you've really broken through that.
It's the best of both worlds, isn't it? I mean,
it really is, especially when you look at what's going on in network radio. They've really de-emphasized news to a great degree. I mean, ABC News, which has always been sort of the flagship of news in network radio, is now not carried by the Cumulus Group, which means there's a whole lot of major markets that they're going to have holes in,
mm-hmm.
Which they've never had before. And then, of course, there is no more NBC News because Cumulus canceled that. And even business news, has seen, a decline in the amount. Now, I think it's more because of the economics that are involved than the demand from consumers and listeners. So we're going to be able to provide access to news, timely news, to advertisers in the audio medium on demand, which has the ability to be able to deliver on a weekly basis maybe three times the audience that the largest of the radio networks ever delivered before. So we think this is a big deal, and we've worked diligently with the Associated Press, who we think is the best partner in this, to come up with something that that'll make a big splash. And if it starts splashing right away, we'll know where people got it from because nobody else knows.
Right. Well, this is a historical moment in my point of view. You have really pioneered again in something that's really going to make an impact in the industry as a whole. We are so grateful for you for having come on as our guest. And thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. I was told that this was going to be my radio show and I could do whatever I want. I had planned to sing a song that I wrote when I was 12. Didn't get the opportunity. Maybe you'll have me back.
No. Let's sing. If you got
I'm not going to sing it.
All right.
I will do a poem that I think I wrote when
Please.
I was in the third grade.
Yes. And your return performance shall be the song.
I'll do that. But the reason that I say I think I wrote it was when I, you know, back in the third grade, I may have read it someplace. And turned it in as an assignment, plagiarized it, and called it my own.
Okay.
But I really do think that I wrote it. And it was called, now remember, I'm in the third grade here. It was called The Jungle by Normie Pattis. And it was, the tiny son of Mary Wumble met a tiger in the jungle. The tiger screamed and acted wild, but Mary Wumble's son just smiled. Mr. Tiger, old and fat, you're nothing but a great big cat. Scat. And that was that.
Wow. Well, thank you, Normie.
Oh, my God. I love that. It's like Kipling and like Lewis Carroll all rolled in. Oh, wow.
Okay.
Well, you know what? We're going to have more poems. You know what? I think that maybe.
Will that be a requirement for our guests from
now? But you know, I will, if since we've gone this far, Norm, can I ask you one more question before we...
You can ask me anything you like.
Okay, this is my signature question. With decades of experience in media, audio in particular, but you have this world range, you know television, you know media like no one in the world, as far as I know. Let me ask you this. What, from your standpoint, what is astonishing you the most about media? Or what you're doing, or what can be done? What's astonishing you?
Well, I think the thing that has surprised me, not that I didn't think it was coming, but that it's been such a rapid transition, was the changing nature of the broadcast medium. There really isn't anything that you could refer to as broadcasting anymore, because broadcasting was traditionally three television networks, or before television, big radio networks that reached huge percentages of the population at a single stroke. And now what's happened is the business has become very much narrowcasting. And it's where the broadcast medium in many cases used to form public opinion, now it more than ever it panders to it. Because it's looking for an audience to reach and give them what they want.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Wow.
And that you know, in many ways is fantastic, and in other ways is quite frightening.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a whole lot of people who don't know what's going on around them in the world except what's most interesting to them, and they're not getting a variety of different points of view. And that concerns me. Clearly, in terms of the ability to be able to access the content that you really want, this is the most democratic it's ever been in the history of communications.
Wow, amazing.
Yeah, something we get into a lot on those cosmic questions. And Eli Pariser wrote The Filter Bubble on that very subject of, you know, we're filtering out what we don't want to hear or aren't interested for just what we already think. But thanks so
Not
much.
Good. Not good.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us. And to our listeners, you are, as usual, our most important guest. So thank you for listening. And please follow us on Podcast One. That's one.com, podcast1.com, and hear all those other wonderful shows that Norm Pattis and his group at Courtside Entertainment have provided for us. Thank you so much, and thank you again, Norm, for coming on.
You bet.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. Coming to you from the studios of the Hank Greenspan School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Listen to archived shows and follow us on Twitter. The views expressed on The Social Network Show are those of the hosts and guests and may not be the views of Social Network Intermedia. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia, copyright 2012.